Good evening, and welcome to tonight's monthly teleconference. All lines are currently in a listen-only mode. During the presentation, we will conduct several question and answer sessions. I will announce the instructions for asking questions before each session. Please try to ask questions that are general in nature and that might appeal to the larger group. Once your question is asked, your line will be remuted. Questions will be taken in the order that they are received. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Piper Reynolds, Senior Manager of Outreach and Education for the National MS Society, Greater Northwest Chapter. Piper, you may now begin.
Okay, thank you, and I'd like to thank everybody for registering for our November monthly teleconference called MS in the Family. We're very excited to have you all on the line this evening. And this teleconference is one of the free and helpful chapters, programs, and services available to people living with MS, from support groups to care management, financial assistance to political advocacy. We are here to help and partner with you. Whether you are a person living with MS, a friend, or caregiver, the National MS Society is here to connect you to the information and resources you need. Contact us anytime by calling 1-800-344-4867 and press option 1. When one member of a family has MS, it is important that the entire family learn how to live with it. Improving or maintaining family function is key to helping you, your partner, and your children adapt to life with MS. When MS enters the family, roles often shift and have a great impact on emotions, bringing feelings of sadness, guilt, anger, while hindering intimacy, joy, growth, and unity within the family. There are ways to maintain stability in the family and communicate freely and effectively about MS. Tonight you will learn how with our expert guest speakers, Amy Heffernan and Allison Fine. In 2008, Amy and her family recognized the 20th year of her mother's diagnosis of MS by writing individual letters to the illness. Her experience caring for her mother was one inspiration of becoming a therapist. She is passionate about the work around families dealing with MS and believes that when one member has MS, everyone has MS. It is a family illness. Amy graduated from Seattle Pacific University in marriage and family therapy. She practices therapy in a group practice in Redmond, where she specializes in addiction, sexuality, and relationship issues. Our other speaker this evening is Allison Fine. Allison began her work with those diagnosed with MS in 2007 through the MS Association of King County. Through her work as a counselor and case manager, she became inspired to support those dealing with chronic illness. She trained at the University of Kansas, where she earned her Master of Social Work degree with a concentration in health and mental health. Through contract work with the National MS Society and through her private practice, Allison continues to work with many individuals and families coping with MS and other concerns on First Hill in Seattle. So we're in very good company this evening. We encourage you to have other members of your family join the call with this evening, as tonight's information pertains to the family as a whole. You may have also received an email from me earlier today that includes slideshows that you can follow along to with this teleconference. If you didn't get that, I will be sending that in a follow-up email that you'll receive tomorrow, including a program evaluation, which we urge you to complete, as your feedback and ideas are very important to us. Within that email, you'll receive information about our upcoming teleconferences and other chapter programs and services available to you. On that note, I thank you again for being on the call this evening and would like to hand it off to Allison and Amy. You two may begin.
Thanks so much, Piper. Hi, everyone. As Piper mentioned, I'm Allison Fine, and I'm going to start off the evening and talk a little bit about managing the household and communication when it comes to MS. So I believe, as Piper mentioned, she sent out one of my presentations to all of you, so feel free to follow along. I want to first start talking about some of the barriers that come up when a household is dealing with MS and just what comes up in trying to run the household effectively. So to start off, fatigue is one of the big things that in the clients that I've worked with, I've seen come up as a huge barrier. You know, if you're just not feeling the energy, it's really hard to get things done around the house. And in addition to fatigue, other physical symptoms can definitely be a barrier as well. If you have difficulty with mobility or balance, it might be hard to vacuum, for example, or just to clean around the house. I'll actually expand in future slides a little bit more on fatigue specifically, but I'll go in and talk a little bit about, you know, if one partner in the household is working and the other one maybe has MS and isn't able to work, which sometimes is the case, it can be really difficult to, you know, figure out where the energy is going to come from to take care of the household, and so that can definitely be another barrier. Feeling as though household duties are not shared in the, you know, as far as cleaning, cooking, laundry, that can definitely come up. Again, if one partner is working and another partner is not, the partner who is working might just not have the energy at the end of the day, MS or not, to be able to, you know, again, clean, cook, do the laundry, all of those kinds of things. And again, even if the partner with MS isn't working, there just might not be that energy there for them either if the fatigue is in the picture. Depression, I'm actually going to skip over because I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in future slides. Difficulty in asking for help can definitely be a barrier. A lot of times people don't want to ask for help for a variety of reasons. And again, in a future slide, I'm going to go over that just a little bit more. And then finally, a last barrier that can really be, you know, in the way of getting the household running efficiently and effectively is just a lack of resources or, you know, specifically financial or familial support. You know, if you have the money to maybe hire a housekeeper to do some of the cleaning and cooking around the house, that can definitely be helpful. But if you don't have the financial resources to be able to put that in place, that can definitely be problematic. And similarly with familial support, a lot of families do rely on maybe extended family to help out with taking care of the kids or maybe doing some of the errands or, again, cleaning and cooking around the house. But again, if you don't have that family support from your extended family specifically, that might not be an option for you. So I want to go on and talk a little bit about fatigue, as I mentioned. So the problem with fatigue and helping the household run effectively is that fatigue is unpredictable. So as many of you know, sometimes you might be feeling fatigued, sometimes you might not be feeling fatigued, and it might depend on whether you've had enough sleep the night before, or you might wake up in the morning and say, I've had 10 hours of sleep and I'm still exhausted. And so it can be hard to predict. You know, if you say to your family member, okay, today I'm going to clean the house, you might just not have the energy to do that when you wake up. So in addition to that, there can be just a lack of understanding with other family members about the lack of control around fatigue. I think unless somebody has really experienced fatigue, it can be difficult to understand exactly what that looks like. And a lot of times people assume that fatigue is, you know, just, oh, I didn't get enough sleep again the night before, but it really is much more than that. It's this feeling that, you know, I've slept enough, but I still can't do anything, and my body just isn't cooperating with me. So then finally, you know, with fatigue, the things can pile up around the house, which can be, you know, again, even more exhausting. And so if you are feeling fatigued already and then look around and you see all of these things that you need to be accomplishing, that can just be overwhelming to think about how am I even going to begin if there's so much to do. So I want to go on and talk a little bit about depression, as I mentioned. The issue with depression in the household and getting things done effectively can be that depression is exhausting. It can be debilitating and unmotivating. And, you know, it can definitely be a challenge for those who both have MS and who don't have MS. And so on the first slide that I gave out to all of you that talks about depression, I mentioned some symptoms that you might notice if you are experiencing depression. And some of those might include feelings of sadness or loneliness, Some of them might include trouble sleeping or sleeping too much, lack of appetite, or you find that you're eating all the time. Definitely a lack of motivation I see in a lot of people. You just have trouble getting yourself going. And then finally, for some, feelings of helplessness or hopelessness, just not sure if, you know, life is worth continuing. So let me go on and talk a little bit about depression and fatigue together. And I think that this is relevant for specifically how you get things done around the house, because they can definitely both play a role together and then also play a role in how you are getting things done and if you're able to get things done. And so if you're feeling fatigued, you know, sometimes you may experience depression as a result of that fatigue and just as a result of not being able to do what you would like to do if you had the energy. And then if you're feeling depressed, you might wonder if it's fatigue, and it might be confused as fatigue because depression can often leave you feeling very tired and leave you wanting to sleep all the time. And so, you know, I guess my tip for all of you with that is that if you think you might be experiencing depression or fatigue, you know, please speak with your doctor. And if it's depression, definitely think about talking with a counselor, because that can be very beneficial. So let me talk a little bit more about depression and fatigue related specifically to managing the household. So what I've noticed in a lot of the families that I've worked with is that it's difficult for families to know when it's fatigue and when it's depression. I've had, you know, families say to me, well, you know, I think that my partner could be doing more. I think that they're just lazy or unmotivated. And so sometimes it's hard, again, for family members to understand what's fatigue and what's depression. And then as a result of that confusion, I think sometimes frustration, anger, and sometimes even resentment can occur if the family feels that the weight isn't being pulled by the person who's experiencing either the depression or the fatigue. So I want to go on and talk a little bit about asking for help. So I've worked with a lot of people who have difficulty in asking for help, and I think that the barrier comes up because for a variety of reasons. I think a huge one is this loss of independence. So, you know, if you're already experiencing some physical changes in your body, cognitive changes in your body due to the MS, you have this sense that you don't have control of your body anymore at times. And so the idea of asking for help kind of plays into that, and it suggests even more that you don't have control over what you're able to do anymore. I think a lot of times people also don't ask for help because of their pride. Also, there's a fear sometimes that people might say no, so people might not be willing to help. Also, I definitely think there's a fear of being a burden, so you don't want to be seen as helpless. So if you are asking for help, is this something that is going to become routine for you? Are you going to have to ask for help all the time? And then finally, I think for some people, maybe not necessarily in the family, since families usually are aware of the diagnosis you have, but, you know, outside of the family, it might be the case that you don't want to disclose that you have MS. And so for some people, the idea of asking for help would mean that they would have to share that the MS is part of the picture. So I want to talk a little bit more just about the importance of asking for help. So, you know, I think it's important to be able to ask for that help, specifically because family will be able to have a better understanding of what your needs are, what your abilities are on any given day. So if on one day you're feeling particularly fatigued and you say to your family member, I just can't do this today, I really need help with this, or, you know, I might be able to accomplish this on the weekend or something, you know, your family is going to have a better idea of what they need to maybe help you out with if they're able to have that communicated to them. I think in addition to that, you know, you as the person who's dealing with MS will have more acceptance about your capabilities and needs as well if you're able to verbalize those to your family. And finally, I think that asking for help, the most important piece is knowing that, you know, if you ask for help, and somebody takes something on for you, that could increase your energy to be able to do some other things throughout your day that maybe you wouldn't have had that energy to do if you hadn't asked for that help. So for example, I work with a lot of seniors and specifically, you know, with getting help getting dressed in the morning. So if it takes somebody 3 hours to get dressed by themselves, but if with help they can get dressed, say, in 15 minutes, then they have that energy to spend the rest of their day doing something else. Okay, so let me move on a little bit. I'm going to talk about, so what do you do? So you notice that these are all barriers for how well you can possibly get things done in the house. But so what do you do about that? So I have a few minutes left, and I just want to talk a little bit about tips for improving communication around the house. So, you know, again, being okay with asking for help. Specifically when you talk with your family, using I statements. So if you say, I feel fatigued, I need you to help me, that can be really useful so that family members know this is really where you're coming from and you're able to verbalize it for yourself. I think also finding a time to meet with your family members can be really helpful, to discuss, you know, on a weekly basis, what are the things that need to be done? Do we need to call somebody to come repair something? Is it just making the lunches for the kids before school in the morning? You know, what are the goals that need to happen each week? And then finally, I think, you know, just being flexible, being able to have backup plans, being able to communicate, you know, if the person in the family who does not have MS says, I've had a long week at work and I just can't fathom coming home and cooking dinner, cleaning the house, you know, communicate that to one another so that you're able to, you know, again, make backup plans or, you know, make other arrangements. So I want to talk finally about just some tips for improving efficiency in the household in addition to those tips for improving communication about how the household is run. So doing things like making a calendar, you know, putting, you know, chore charts, chore wheels on the refrigerator, you know, make it fun, use your creativity. Be able to, you know, get the kids involved if there are kids in your family, you know, make lists, you know, just do things to help yourself stay organized so that you can really, you know, make the most out of your time together as a family and so that it doesn't become stressful to figure out how to manage the household. So I know that's a very quick overview, but I'm going to turn it over to the operator, and we can do a few minutes of questions if any of you have questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you have any questions, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question comes from Lindsay. Please go ahead.
Did you say Lindsay?
Yes, ma'am, you are live. Go ahead.
Okay. I have had MS. My first symptoms were in 1975. And so my family grew up with me having MS. And about 10 years ago, I no longer can even walk with a walker. And I'm just wondering, is that something that I need to share with them? The, you know, I have three grown adult children that are out of the house, and I just don't know how to interact at that level. It's a whole different level when your children are out of the house. Any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Operator, am I still on the line here? Can you hear me, Lindsay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so I assume I'm still in the line then. So, yeah, Lindsay, I think it's extremely important to communicate whatever your needs are and as they change to the rest of your family, even if your family isn't living at home anymore. I think that sometimes makes it even more important to use the verbal communication because they're not there to see exactly what's going on from day to day. And, you know, they're not able to visualize what you are capable of and what you're not. And so then, you know, as a result, they're not able to jump in and help. So I do think it's really really important, especially as your needs are changing. You know, maybe some days you need help with some things and other days you need help with others. But yeah, in general, I think it's a great idea to just have open communication and be really honest about where your needs are at.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you have any questions, please press the number one key on your phone. Our next question comes from Sandra. Please go ahead.
Yes, Amy. I'm a clinician, and I have a question about recognizing some of the sexual intimacy issues that can impact a couple experiencing MS primarily at the early stages of symptomology.
Yeah, we're going to address that in kind of the later part of the teleconference, and we'll have a Q&A after that too. So hold your question, and maybe I'll answer it, and maybe you can ask it again, and we'll go from there.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Mike. Please go ahead, Mike.
Yes, I would like to know I encourage my wife when she. In the last couple of years, it's been taking her so long to take care of herself, like in the morning, to get dressed and go to the bathroom and brush her teeth. So by the time she gets down, she realizes the day's over and she gets all frustrated at herself. So because of that, she ends up wasting more time, even though some of it she needs to rest. But when she says, I wasted my day and I didn't do anything today, I just got dressed, I just took a shower, or whatever, basically by the shower days, it takes her so long. Is there any tips how to encourage someone like that? She
That's a really good question, Mike, and that's a big part of why, you know, your question is a big part of why I wanted to talk about the fatigue versus the depression, because I think a lot of times those two can be really confusing, you know, both for families and then also for the person maybe experiencing them. So what I would want to know is, you know, is it a motivational problem or is it an energy problem? And are there things that she can do, like making lists for herself to try to motivate herself? You know, that if she writes down three things every morning that she wants to do during the day, you know, if that's helpful, or if it's an energy problem, it might be something to speak with a doctor about. Sometimes there are things that they can do with fatigue that are more medically related. And then I guess the other thing I would suggest is exercise. You know, it's kind of a catch-22 with fatigue. If you're feeling tired, you know, exercise is probably the last thing you want to do. But at the same time, if you are exercising, you know, in whatever way your capabilities will allow you to, it will improve the fatigue over time. So it's, again, it's kind of a catch-22 there. But those would be my thoughts. I don't know, Amy, do you have any other thoughts about that?
I think you wrapped it up pretty nice. So
yeah. Okay, thanks. Yeah, mm-hmm. And hopefully that answers your question.
And our next question comes from Alan. Alan, please go ahead.
Hello. I'm also a clinician, and what I see a lot is the caregiver not taking care of himself or herself. And I'm wondering if you have any tips on how to encourage the caregiver to seek help coping with all these changes and losses.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's so important for the caregivers to get the support that they need, and a lot of times they don't get it because, you know, there's not time or they're not able to get away from the caregiving duties to seek that. But I think that respite can be really important, and so if there's an opportunity to bring somebody else in to provide the care so that the caregiver can feel comfortable leaving to have a break or to do some self-care for themselves, I think that that's really important. I think just educating caregivers that, you know, that caregiving all the time can lead to burnout and that self-care with that is really important is another big step in that. You know, there are tons of caregiver support groups related to MS and not in the community. And so I would definitely encourage caregivers to try to be a part of those. And I guess I'll add to that that a lot of caregiver support groups will include the partner that's being taken care of. And so they'll be able to bring the person they're caregiving for with them to the group and then split up the time so that there's time for them to converse with other caregivers while their partner is conversing with others that are being taken care of.
I'll just piggyback a little bit on that, too, is that how important it is to sometimes take off the caregiving role and the care receiver role. And so finding times, encouraging your clients in the day to find time to just enjoy each other as people, not as the roles that they have. And I'm going to kind of address some ideas on that later, too. So
I think that might be a good chance. Well, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that might be a good chance to switch over to Amy's presentation.
All right. Is that okay, operator?
Yes, ma'am. I was going to say there are no more questions in queue.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, hi, everybody. I'm Amy Heffernan, and thanks so much for being on the call. These teleconferences, I've been in a couple through the MS Society. It's always interesting because as a therapist, I'm used to having people in front of me nodding, or if you're falling asleep, then I know to kind of spice things up a little bit. But with the teleconferences, I can't see you, so I just can pretend that you guys are sitting on a beach in Hawaii listening to this or whatever. So, and I can, you know, you don't know if I'm in my pajamas or if I'm on a beach either, so just pretend I'm on a beach, okay? That's where I am. Anyway, so I get the great opportunity of talking about parenting at NMS, and I have a lot of personal experience, not necessarily with parenting, but receiving the parenting because my mom did have MS and still does. And I've grown up basically since I was 8 years old with my mom having MS. So we kind of tease, and I don't know if tease is the right word, but we kind of talk about MS as the seventh member of our family because it's definitely played a huge role in how our dynamics are and things like that. So hopefully I can give you guys some ideas about, you know, if there's parents that are on this call or if there's any kids on this call or clinicians that are listening to this when parenting issues come up with their clients, hopefully I can give you guys some real-life ideas because I know sometimes you can read books, but when you're actually doing it in life, it feels a lot different. So the first, I'm going to kind of talk about some of the challenges that we face. Now, I hope that this isn't going to be all doomsday because I'm going to give you some information that might feel kind of heavy, but I also want to kind of preface it with a little bit of hope that your kids are going to turn out and your family's going to be okay. Every family has challenges. I am convinced of that being a family therapist, and this is just one specific one, and so there, and you can get through it. Okay, so that's my preface for hope. But there are some things that you want to be able to be supporting and nurturing of your children in the environment that they're growing up in, okay, so while at the same time you're going to be managing all the stuff that comes with your illness or your partner's illness. So you're kind of just trying to juggle this whole act of parenting is hard enough, and then you're working with this illness that is just not fun, is the reality of it sometimes. And so how do you kind of be able to maintain all of your sanity in doing that, okay? So that's a challenge that people have. Another one is that how are you going to be able to, the unpredictability of MS. It's always changing. I always say that MS is like a moving target. You think you got something figured out, and then you'll have an attack or an exacerbation that will just kind of change things, and you're like, wait, I thought we had this figured out, and then you have to kind of readjust. And I think it was the flexibility that Allison was talking about earlier that's definitely going to come into parenting with kind of managing that. So a lot of studies have shown that if you're comparing people that have a parent that has a physical illness versus healthy parents, you know, that sometimes the children have higher levels of emotional distress, behavior problems, and social competencies, okay? So that is kind of a heavy, heavy research to kind of swallow, and so it's like, how can you be able to help prevent that from happening and help and kind of just be aware of the things that you can do to be able to kind of help those things? So hopefully some of these points in my presentation will kind of help you say, okay, how can I be aware of what's going on with my kids? Parents with MS often need to have more creative and structured energy because their energy and their time is more limited. If you have the fatigue or the depression and it's hard to go to the soccer games or it's hard to show up for the dance classes or whatever it is, you have to be creative with saying, okay, I can't arrive at the soccer game early. I need to come in just a little bit later, right when the game's starting. You know, so you kind of got to be, you know, on your toes with managing your own illness and or your spouse's illness with how you parent. So that's going to be something else you got to work on. So I'm going to go from here kind of talking about the communication you can do as a family and in particular with parenting and then also your self-care that you can take with parenting. Some of these things are going to be piggyback and kind of reiterations of what Allison pointed on, which were so great and helpful, I hope, for you all. So the first thing is, don't hide MS from your kids. I have a lot of clients when they're first getting diagnosed with MS and they think maybe we shouldn't tell our kids and things like that. But I just have found in so many situations being open and honest with your kids but not overwhelming them or overburdening them is the perfect approach on how to talk about MS. Okay, I always talk about you don't want to make little parents, and the nerdy therapy word is called parentifying your kids because they still need to be kids. And so it's a balance that you're going to have as parents to say, how do we manage this but not overshare, but also be able to be open and communicate with your kids about the honesty of what's going on with the illness, okay? So remember, don't make little parents, but still be able to be open and honest with your kids. So it's definitely a fine line. Also encourage appropriate age conversations. There's things that, you know, like a 10-year-old doesn't need to know about, and there's things that a 17-year-old can appropriately process. My mom, she did a stem cell transplant in 2000, and so I was at an age where I took off school and I came and helped her, and I was her primary caregiver for that time. And so I had to have a lot of conversations that were difficult, and I think at that age I was appropriate to kind of differentiate between, okay, this is my mom's illness and this is me. But when you're a little kid, sometimes it's hard to know that is mom going to die or is dad going to die. And so you definitely have to make sure that you're having appropriate age conversations when you're doing parenting. Create an atmosphere where your kids know that they can talk to you about MS, even with all the stuff that happens. Every year I work with the MS Society doing the MS Kids Camp, and it's surprising everything that comes up for them when we kind of I do kind of the emotional stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of anger. There's sometimes embarrassment. There's sometimes really strength that you hear these kids talk about that they've learned from MS. And so all of those things just give me hope. And so if you make it so that this MS word isn't talked about, or you don't, the kids aren't allowed to say, like, I'm embarrassed that my mom has a cane or my dad has a cane or whatever it is, then it creates a space where kids don't feel safe. And so the more you can kind of create that energy of, this is okay to talk about, what are you feeling, or are you afraid, or expectations of where the illness is going to go. It's really try to make that as safe as possible for your kids, because it'll be really positive, okay? The next one is get educated as family. There is so much information out there. You can Google it. You can go to all the support groups. You can do everything. But the more you can get educated as a family, the easier it's going to be to communicate with your kids. There's so many resources for kids. There's resources for you. There's resources for couples. It's just there's so many things. So tap into that, because it's going to really benefit you as you move forward through the process. Creating a normal environment for your kids is really important. And clearly, MS is not normal, so it's like, how do you really create a normal space? But the harder that you can work to kind of making things seem like they're balancing, and I kind of use the term like this is a team effort, but also having your kids not take on too much as a caregiver role is going to be really important, because if kids become too much of a caregiver or your spouse becomes too much of a caregiver, then it's hard to feel normal, you know, so you kind of got to do the balancing act, and that's super hard too. So I know that it's easier said than done, but it's something to always have on your mind is, am I balancing this okay? Are we doing all right, you know? Creating structure around what's expected for chores, caregiving responsibilities, and try to stick with it. I know that growing up, when I would come home from school, my mom would have a long list of things for me to do because of the age that I was, where my mom's illness was like going. And so it was a harder time in our family when I was at an age that I could help more. And so there were times when I would be resentful of the fact that she didn't ask me how my day was, because she just had this big long list of things to do for, you know. And so being aware of having structure and being able to, you know, balance between the role as a parent and sometimes having your kids help, that is going to be great, because everybody's in this together. I say that all the time. And it's okay to have kids help out, because kids should have responsibility, but also being able to kind of create structure within that so that it's not always different, you know. But like I said, MS is a moving target. So, again, you know, you just do your best. Encourage normal activities outside the house. So let your kids engage in, you know, extracurricular activities. Let your spouse, you know, try to stay engaged in things that are interesting to you. And the most important thing is finding ways to play as a family. I see so many times when it becomes so heavy and so serious and so stressful that people forget to laugh and forget to engage, like, in things that are fun. I have a friend who they have MS, and the husband has MS. He's in a wheelchair, and the family ended up buying him a Wii that, you know, that you can like play golf and tennis and all that stuff because he's in a wheelchair. And so they had to be creative about how they can play as a family, because they had obviously what was a big sports family. It changed when the dad got into a wheelchair. So finding ways to do that is going to be really positive for your family. And there's lots of creative things you can do out there. So. Recognizing that MS is a part of the family, Piper said at the beginning of the teleconference, when my mom had her 20-year anniversary, being the therapist's daughter, I asked that all of us write our own personal letters to MS, like it was, you know, there in the room with us or whatever, and we read them together, and very much MS has been a part of our family. We cannot deny it. It's changed everything. And so recognizing important dates, anniversaries, the impact, discussing how the illness has changed the family is really important. If you just don't talk about it, it just keeps kind of festering, and I just think it makes the family sick a lot. So be open about it. Drawing pictures for younger kids, doing art projects, you know, just kind of things to kind of recognize that it's there and that, you know, it's impacting you guys is important. Allison touched on the time management, organization, and scheduling. So the communication is so key in parenting. And oftentimes with teenagers, I tell people that instead of talking, communication is actually listening when you have teenagers. So listen up. Like, what are your kids saying? What do you hear them complaining about? What do you hear them sharing? What do you hear their fears? You know, make sure that you're kind of in touch with kind of where they're at. And that means that sometimes as parents, you kind of got to turn it down so that you can listen up and hear what they're saying. Everyone needs to pitch in. So, you know, by organizing it, Allison talked about making a calendar, keeping that kind of organized. It kind of makes it so that people know what their expectations are. And like Allison said, too, be flexible. Your kids are going to gain great character from this experience. They're going to, you know, for me, definitely was one of the reasons why I got interested in doing therapy, because of how it affected our family and seeing how one change really made a big difference. So, but you got to be flexible. It's so important, and it's so hard because it's easy to just get stuck in your structure. And a supportive presence usually outweighs any embarrassment. So if your kids are embarrassed that you might have a cane or that you might be showing up to something in your wheelchair or that you walk with a limp or whatever it is, your kids will mostly remember you being there versus being embarrassed, you know. So that usually is for a younger crowd, that issue. So, but it's okay if they're embarrassed, then talk about it, you know. Self-care while parenting with MS. So maintaining a support network is so big. Allison kind of talked about this. When to ask for help is so important. I think we live in a culture that sometimes it's embarrassing to ask for help, but if you have family, if you have a church community around you to be able to kind of help do the juggling that it takes to be a family, then that's going to really be really significant in, I think, maintaining self-care. Seek help in appropriate places. Like I said, if you feel like your kids are being overburdened, make sure that you're asking help in places that are going to be more balanced for your family. Be careful of isolation. There's so many help out there. The MS Society is a great resource. There's community members. There's counselors out in the world. And so a lot of the big fear is that people isolate. And that's just, you know, it's really sad when I see that, because there is a lot that can be learned from each other. So going to support groups is a great way to do that. Maintain outside interests and friendship. That's going to be huge for both people, the spouse, the caregiver, and the person dealing with the illness. It's really important to be able to stay engaged in things that you've always been interested in. Be assertive. Ask for what you need. Don't be afraid. People want to help you. They really do. Knowing your limits. So you have to be careful of your energy bank account. So I talk about that a lot in therapy, is being able to gauge, am I too tired today? And if so, how do I balance out that tiredness with what are the needs of my family? And so so reserve your energy if it means that something, the dishes don't get done, or you have to miss, you know, something that it seems important, then go with it, you know, because you really got to tap into conserving your energy and being able to stay healthy so that you can be a good parent or be a good sister or brother, whatever it is that is, you know, in relation to your illness at this time. keeping yourself healthy and balanced. So I'm sure all of you have heard that analogy of the oxygen mask, wherein they say at the airplane, if, you know, the airbags come down, you have to put the air on first before you put it on your children. And I think that is very true in life, is that, you know, you got to make sure that, and not in a selfish way, but that you're taking care of yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself, then it's going to be really hard to take care of the people around you. That goes for the caregiver and the person with MS and any children, you know, so it applies to everybody. It's hard to be a parent, and I know that all of these this information that we're throwing at you is, it's easier said than done, but it's, you know, hopefully it's sparking something that can help you remember. There's a lot of stress that comes with this illness, so be easy on yourself and know that there's a lot of people that have gone through it and people have made it through, and so just, you know, try to stay balanced with not having too much guilt. I know that a lot of people that come in to see me, they talk so much about the guilt that they have, and I want to, like, just remove it and say, guilt, get out of here, because, you know, I know everybody's, you know, most of the time just doing the best that they can. It's okay to be not okay. So the grief in the family around illness changes, and it's everyone's at different stages, and it's okay to, you know, be mad sometimes and be sad sometimes, and just if you can be okay with where you are with your feelings, I think that's going to be huge in terms of just being honest and taking care of yourself. Don't get caught up in the little things. I think it's hard to see the big picture sometimes when especially when the MS might be flaring up more, it's hard to kind of see the big picture, and it's really important to be able to kind of have your family and community around you to help support you in that. The last thing on self-care is nurturing the couple relationship. I know that there's probably, I don't know everybody's status of relationship out there on this phone, so I'm going to try to be sensitive to everybody, but if you are in a couple relationship and it's really important to have date night, invest in each other. Your kids want to see you loving each other. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I've heard is that, you know, kids, it matters for them to see their parents happy. And there's a lot of stress that comes, and the couple relationship does change a lot when MS is then introduced in that threesome. And so it's important to kind of engage your head. And like I said before, take off certain roles that you might have. Sometimes your kids are going to help you. Sometimes your spouse is going to help you. Sometimes you're helping your spouse or your kids, but it's important to remember to be in the roles that you're best at, which is to love each other. On the slides that Piper sent you guys, there's some resources of books that I've listed there. You can look into that. And then lastly, take advantage of the chapter resources. There are so many great things for kids and for moms and dads, and they have online resources. They do like a couples retreat every year that's an amazing program, the Kids Journey Camp, which is I wish I had when I was a little kid. It's just awesome because they really do a good job of engaging people in their programs. And so just because you're on this call means that you're doing it. So I commend you for that, and just keep that up. And just know that there's a big army of people out there that are rooting for you on this issue. So we can open this time up. We have about, you know, 5 minutes for questions on this topic also. So take it away, operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you have any questions, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question comes from Connie. Please go ahead.
My husband and I are both on this call. He's in Denver and I'm in Seattle. And we're the parents of a 25-year-old, newly diagnosed daughter. And so being the parents of an adult, quote-unquote, child, and realizing that MS is part of the family, what if you're putting your oxygen mask on but the child refuses to put the oxygen mask on? And, you know, we're looking for ways that we can help our daughter make room for MS in her personal and professional life without, you know, giving it more time or attention than it needs. Like, getting the balance is so tough. And So it's from that point of view.
Okay. Is she having a hard time just accepting the fact that she has MS?
I believe so. She's very fatigued, very depressed, very angry.
Okay. I would just what I would encourage is try to help her get some counseling resources. You know, if she is in the Seattle area, I know that there's a lot of counselors that specialize in MS, and the MS Society can help you find some of those people that might be in her area. But if she's having, you know, symptoms of depression and not really being able to kind of, you know, accept the fact that she has this illness, which I can completely understand. It's a hard illness to swallow. And so, you know, talking that out with a therapist that's more neutral than your family members who are a little bit more emotionally involved, which is good. They should be, right? You guys care about her and you love her, and so you care about her well-being, but maybe having her have a safe place to just be sad and share her fears and things like that, I think it's really positive for people to be able to kind of have a place where they process that. So if anything, I would say encourage her to get counseling and get some help that way.
Our next question comes from Mark. Please go ahead. Mark?
Well, I was wondering if there was any information on helping people go from a couch to a scooter.
Moving from a couch to a scooter. So are you talking about like physical therapy kind of things?
Yeah, I didn't know if that's the kind of stuff that this conference talked about or...
You know, I think occupational therapists are really good at helping people kind of work that out. And, it's not something that I necessarily do personally. I kind of work on more of the emotional stuff, and I think probably Allison does too. But I know that occupational therapists are the people that you can really tap into to kind of help people transition from anything. So I remember my mom, she had to learn how to get out of bed by herself. And so we had an occupational therapist come in, and they are so skilled at helping and ideas that I would have never thought possible for people to be able to learn how to do things that seem impossible. So I would say you could contact the chapter, or you could kind of ask around and see if there's some occupational therapists that could come into the home and help with that issue. Allison, do you have any ideas, other ideas?
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with what you said, Amy. You know, as I mentioned before, I work with a lot of seniors, and so there are definitely adjustments as you get older, as there are similarly with MS when your body is going through these changes. And so being able to work with either a physical therapist or an occupational therapist, they can definitely help you to figure out, you know, the best way to move, the best way to transfer, you know, the best ways to save your energy, you know, those kinds of things. So, yeah, I would definitely agree with Amy on that. And specifically, you can talk with your doctor, too, depending on your insurance. You may need a referral from your doctor to be able to get those services, but that might be something to look into.
Our next question comes from Tracy. Please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I have MS, and I go to an MS group in the area where I am. And I think I've wanted to go to a counselor, but I'm kind of scared to, because we had one of the guys in our group who went to a counselor in our area, and the guy wound up putting him in a 72-hour hold because he told them he was depressed, which, of course, is natural with our disease. And I'm claustrophobic, and I'm terrified of talking to somebody that they might choose to try to institutionalize me. That would be ridiculous. I mean, is
yeah.
there any suggestions for finding a counselor in the area where I am who knows about MS and would not go too far?
Yeah, so I can completely understand your fears. A lot of people have fears when they come into therapy, and so it's important that when you finally do find a counselor, kind of talk about those fears. Counselors are mandated reporters, so if there's a suspicion of that could possibly be suicide, then that would be a warning sign. And, you know, if you're at that place, getting that help is important. But if you don't feel like you're at a place of suicide and you just want to go in and talk, I would say that most therapists aren't going to institutionalize you for no reason. So I would say I completely hear your fear, but, you know, I don't think that, you know, unless you are feeling really suicidal, that shouldn't be a concern. Lara Hayden, she's at the MS Society. She has a list of counselors that are trained in MS counseling, and so you can call her. Her name's L-A-R-A, Lara Hayden, and she is a great resource for being able to find somebody that would fit for you. But definitely the relationship you have with the counselor is really important. So if it's not a good fit, then there's other counselors out there, so make sure that you find someone that you can really connect with.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, please press the number one key on your phone. Our next question comes from Sandra. Please go ahead.
Yes, I asked the question earlier about working to educate a couple about early stages of MS symptomology and the impact on sexual relations and what that might look like and what couples to cope and adjust.
Yeah. So that's our last section is on sexuality. I'm sorry to keep putting you off, but that's definitely going to Allison is going to share some stuff, and then I'm going to share a whole section on sexuality. So we haven't forgotten you. And that's probably a good way to transition into Allison right now also. So thanks for your questions. We really appreciate it.
And there are no more questions in queue at this time.
Thanks. Thanks, Amy. So as Amy mentioned, I'm going to talk a little bit more about just communication in the MS relationship. And I know I talked before, what communication looks like in the household specifically, but I want to talk, to start with just generally about good versus bad communication. And so, for lack of a better word, a good communication, it will leave you feeling supported by your partner. If you are having a good, open, honest communication, you feel like you can talk about things on a regular basis. Having good communication does not necessarily mean you and your partner agree. It just means that you're able to talk about things effectively, even if you don't end up on the same page at the end of the conversation. And finally, having good communication just really involves conversations not just about MS, but about other areas of your lives together. And so, keep those in mind as I go through and talk a little bit more about communication and MS. And again, bad communication, bad for lack of a better word here, can really be problematic in relationships, and especially in relationships where one partner is going through physical or cognitive challenges. So having bad communication in a relationship can really leave people feeling alone or unheard. So if you are trying to converse with somebody and they're not listening to you or they're shutting you down every time you open your mouth, you will feel like no one's really listening to you. Doesn't really open the door for future conversations if those are the patterns that are going on. Also, if you are trying to share with your partner that you're feeling sad or frustrated or alone, and your partner says, "Oh, don't worry about that," or "No, you're not feeling that way," again, that's not going to make you feel like you can talk about these things or as though your feelings are even that valid. And then finally, some other signs that there might be some bad communication going on are things like yelling or just shutting down, so not being willing to talk about things. Some of you might have experienced this. You try to have a conversation with somebody that might be difficult in nature, and you just get nothing back. And so, those kinds of things you might notice in your relationships, and, I'm going to talk a little bit more about specifically to MS, how that plays in, and then, what to do about it. So let me go on and talk a little bit specifically in how MS plays into how we communicate. So in a relationship where MS is part of the partnership, really it can involve anything from talking with your partner day-to-day about symptoms, especially if you're going through an exacerbation, going through a flare-up, and so your symptoms are more prominent. Being able to talk with your partner about that, making decisions about treatment options, as, a lot of you know, the treatments out there can be really scary. And if you've never dealt with anything medically before, and all of a sudden your doctors are telling you you're going to have to give yourself shots, X number of times a week or go in for infusions, that can be really scary. And so having a partner to help you make those treatment decisions can be really helpful. it kind of goes the other way as well. You know, I talked about fatigue before in my first presentation. So, you know, if you have a limited energy for talking with one another, you know, that can definitely be a barrier in having good, positive communication with your partner. And then finally, another thing that can come up in just dealing with MS and having good communication is being able to educate one another about MS, and then also, you know, being able to educate others about MS. So it might be the case that somebody says, you know, oh, what's going on with your husband or wife or your girlfriend or boyfriend or your partner? And, you know, they notice that there are some maybe physical challenges that that person is having. And so you as the partner might find that you're having to explain what, you know, what that's about and explain MS. And, you know, at the same token, the person who is living with MS might find that they're having to explain what fatigue feels like or what it feels like if you have Laramie's sign, for example, and you're getting shocks going up and down your spine. And so those kinds of conversations will most likely be happening in your MS relationship. So, you know, similar to having barriers in getting things done in the household, there can be barriers to communicating effectively with one another. So some of these you might recognize from my previous presentation, but I think that they're really prominent just for being able to communicate. And so I'll talk first, you know, again, just about that loss of independence. So if you fear that you're losing your independence, you might be a lot less likely to ask for help. You might be less likely just to admit to where you're at on any given day, maybe for fear that, you know, you are losing independence. And so, again, there's that difficulty with asking for help that comes for a variety of reasons that I talked about before. There might be hesitations in being honest with how bad you might be feeling. And I think a lot of times that happens because, you know, partners don't want their loved ones to worry about them. And similarly, loved ones, you know, are going to worry about their partners. And so if you know that that's the case, you might not want to say, oh, I'm just not feeling very good today, because your partner might, you know, then worry about you or wonder if you're going to make it through the rest of the day okay if they go off to work. You know, so that's definitely something that comes into play as well. Again, I think for some people there's a fear that your partner might leave you if your health worsens. I don't know how prominent that is for those of you who are listening, but it's definitely a fear with some of the people that I've worked with. And, you know, it's hard to come to terms with that, and I can't tell all of you that that's never happened, because I've definitely seen cases where it has. But again, I think that improving communication, it makes it a lot less likely that that would be the case. And also, you know, those caregiving strategies that we talked about before for caregivers being able to take care of themselves. Someone asked a great question about that. I think that's the other piece to it. And then finally, I think there's just difficulty for the partner without MS and understanding what their partner is really going through. You know, I think for anything, unless you are able to put yourself in someone else's shoes, that it's really difficult to really understand what somebody else is going through unless you're experiencing it yourself. And so that can definitely be problematic when trying to explain to maybe the partner in the relationship who doesn't have MS, you know, what it feels like, what it looks like, how bad it can be on any given day. So I want to then briefly talk a little bit about tips for improving communication. So what do you do if you notice that, you know, some of these bad things that I've talked about might be going on in your relationships? You know, there's hope. There are definitely things that you can do to improve that. So I've listed quite a few on my slides that Piper had emailed out to all of you. You know, again, learning to ask for help when you need it, being able to communicate to your partner, hey, I just can't do this today. I'm going to need your help with this. You know, that's really important to be able to say that and overcome that fear behind the asking for help. And again, I know I talked about this in my other presentation, but using the I statement, so I feel frustrated, I feel alone, I feel fatigued, or I need help. So just being able to express your needs and feelings to one another is extremely important, you know, for both the partner who has MS and also the partner who does not have MS. And then I think paying attention to body language can be really important. So, you know, even if your partner isn't very good at verbalizing how they're feeling and you see them lying on the couch or you've noticed that they haven't gotten out of bed all day, you can pay attention to that and you can assume that maybe they're not doing so hot if they haven't been able to get up and around very much. And then finally, you know, I think it's finding the humor, you know, can be really important, finding things to laugh at, as Amy really beautifully talked about, you know, being able to find the fun and find playtime and do things that aren't completely focused on MS, because that's not all that life has to be about, you know, even though some days it probably feels like it. And then finally, one last thing I want to talk about on this particular slide is being able to set aside time to talk about MS. I think it's really important to be able to talk about it with your partner, but without letting it consume your relationship all the time. I had a newly diagnosed support group that I was leading a while back, and I had a brilliant participant who said that her and her husband would set aside special MS time, and they would only be able to talk about MS during that time, during the week, and the rest of the time MS was off limits. And I thought that that was really great because, you know, even if there were things that they needed to say during the rest of the week, they didn't let it consume their relationship, and they made their relationship about a lot more than just MS, but still made time to talk about it when they needed to. So I just want to talk a few more tips for communication here. So again, as Amy talked about, seeking support from others, you know, family and friends, if you're able to, religious organizations, you know, churches, synagogues, mosques, I think all of those can be great resources. And I apologize for any religious affiliations I've left out there. Support groups can be a great support. I've run numerous newly diagnosed groups and always see the group benefiting from that and sometimes even benefit from facilitating it myself. Avoid mind reading. I think that's a big one. I think a lot of times, especially in a romantic type partnership, we assume that we know our partners, but we don't always know what they're thinking. And so, you know, if you have questions about what the other person is thinking or feeling, I would say ask them. You know, you can't assume that somebody's feeling well, you know, by just looking at them, because, you know, as a lot of you know with MS, a lot of the symptoms are what we call phantom symptoms, and so they're invisible to others around us. So another thing that Amy touched upon is being autonomous. So, you know, have things that you enjoy, hobbies, you know, spend time with friends, family, you know, do things that are, you know, outside of just being a couple, so that you feel like you do have an identity and something that you can hold on to in addition to being part of a great couple. And then finally, you know, if there are concerns in your relationship, if you feel like you're stuck in maybe some of those bad communication patterns that you're not able to get out of, you know, definitely consider seeing a counselor and specifically, you know, a couples therapist and somebody that might know about chronic illness, I think can be really helpful. And again, as Amy mentioned, you can contact Laura at the Society, and she can definitely give you some referrals for counselors who work with people with MS who might also see couples. And then finally, I just want to leave with this quote that I found that I thought really spoke to what I'm talking about here in regards to communication. And it says, "The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place." And that really spoke to me specifically with my comment about avoiding mind reading. You know, I think that, again, a lot of times we assume that we know what somebody else is thinking, and we can never really know unless we ask and unless we communicate about it. So that's all I have for you regarding that. And so, you know, operator, we can open it up to, actually, I'm sorry, I think Amy is the routine here that you're going to speak first, and then we'll do questions after that.
Yep, you got it. That was great. Tons of good stuff.
So I will turn it over to Amy then.
All right, thanks, Allison. That was very beneficial, I think, even for me as a couples counselor to hear that stuff reiterated again. So hopefully you guys got some good information on that too. So if you guys were in front of me, this is the part where everybody gets kind of, they start blushing because I'm going to talk about sex, you know, and it's so interesting working with couples around this issue. This is always this is always sometimes the unspeakable thing that people have a hard time bringing up with each other, and a lot of fear around this issue. So I realize, again, I'm going to just put this out there that I don't know what everybody is out there, coupled or partner or sexually active in a dating relationship or single. So I'm hoping to kind of give you a broad thing, even though at times I am going to be talking about as a couple, okay? So hopefully I don't want to offend anybody, and just know that I'm going to try to, you know, give this a broad approach, okay? So MS and sexuality is a huge topic, and I get a lot of referrals from couples that are dealing with it. To normalize it a little bit, this is an issue with regular couples too. So, again, like I said, with parenting, you're just dealing with parenting stuff is hard, and then the MS kind of is difficult too. But with sexuality, all couples are dealing with this, and then to throw the MS thing, it really does kind of change things. So they did this big survey that I've read about, and 63% of the people reported that their sexual activity has declined since diagnosis. Okay, so that's a big percentage. So it's like, how do we help this issue, okay? Another survey says that 91% of men and 72% of women may be affected by sexual problems, okay? So if you are the person that has MS, if you're a partner of someone with MS, if your parents, like the caller that had the question, there's going to be some stuff that comes up with your sexuality. So the more information that you can get on it, and the more, you know, kind of acceptance that we have around this issue, it's going to help a lot. And so hopefully you can bear through the embarrassing frankness of my discussion here. All right. Ignoring these problems can lead to a huge loss of quality of life with your relationship. Okay, so this is an important issue. I'm really passionate about it. Sleeping with multiple sclerosis. All right, there's three primary sexual dysfunctions: primary, secondary, and the tertiary. Okay, I'm going to talk about these individually. So the primary sexual dysfunction is when there's a direct result of the neurological changes that affect the sexual response. Okay, so this is decreased or absent sex drive. That's a direct neurological change. Altered genital sensation, numbness, pain, hypersensitivity in the genital areas, decreased vaginal muscle tone, difficulty or inability to get an erection is a huge issue with men that have MS. Decreased vaginal lubrication or clitoral engorgement, also big for women. It's harder to, you know, to lubricate during sex. Difficulty with or an inability to ejaculate, and a decreased frequency or intensity of your orgasm, okay? So this is the primary sexual dysfunctions, okay? Secondary dysfunctions are more symptoms not associated with the nerve pathways, but that are then affect your sexuality, okay? So this is bladder and bowel problems. So a lot of times it's hard to control your bladder, and sometimes when people are having sex, the pee just comes. And so that's a hard thing to deal with when that changes in your sexuality. Fatigue, as Allison mentioned, is huge. If you're so tired, it's not like you're going to want to get freaky with your partner. You know, it's a hard thing, or vice versa. If your partner's really tired, it's going to be hard to kind of manage that. Let's see, different positioning and pain, this affects your sexuality, muscle weakness, body or hand tremors. You know, that kind of affects how you're going to be in an intimate relationship. Sensory changes, you know, ringing in the ears, dizziness, all that kind of thing. You know, those are all things that, you know, if you're really dizzy, it's going to be hard to engage in sexuality. Impairments in attention, cognition, and concentration. I always tease that you can say, like, well, didn't we just have sex? Oh, wait, it's my MS, and it's been weeks, you know. So I always tease couples that they forget how long it's been between sex. Low testosterone in men is also a symptom, and that obviously affects your sex drive, okay? So tertiary sexual dysfunction is a result of the disability related to the psychology and cultural issues that can interfere with your own sexualities and feelings and experience. So having MS, it's all kind of that psychological stuff that goes on, the cultural issues, okay? Performance anxiety. This is big for men with MS, okay? They're like, worry that they're not going to be able to perform to the ability that they once did. Self-esteem, when you have, like, issues about, you know, not feeling sexy because you have MS or things like that, that definitely plays into, you know, the relationship. Depression, grief, mood swings, the guilt, family and social changes, gender expectations. So, you know, as a man, you're supposed to be doing things a certain way, and as a woman, you're supposed to be doing things a certain way. Like, all that gets mixed up into this. and then the role changes. So for both the caretaker and the caregiver, I know it's hard when, you know, you're at certain stages, you're helping in different ways, and it's hard to kind of switch from I'm helping you, you know, put your clothes on to then having to try to be in a sexual, you know, being sexual with each other. It's, you definitely have to take off that hat. And so sometimes kind of changing roles and being intentional about how you are going to show up for each other that way, that's really hard to kind of navigate. Feelings of being disabled, so that feeling of I'm a disabled person and, you know, what all the ramifications that comes with it. So healthy sexuality involves mutual affection, warmth, tenderness, physical touch, and playfulness and love. It is not just about intercourse or genital contact, okay? So, you know, you've been diagnosed with MS, or your wife has, or your husband has, whatever, and you forget that just being close and being physical with each other is so important. And it's even more important than what orgasm is or that sexual release. Those things are definitely important, but a lot of times people forget that just being close and touching, skin to skin, massaging, things like that are also really important to feel intimate with each other. Our sexual needs change because of age, illness, family demands, and it's important to continue meeting those needs for touch, affection, and love because it helps people stay healthy. There's so many studies on how good sex is for people. It reduces stress, it releases endorphins, it just is, it's a good thing, okay? So I'm going to touch on treatments for women. So here's some ideas, okay? Things that you can try at home. Vaginal lubrications, that you can buy these over the counter. A lot of people are get nervous about this. I remember someone asking me if lubrications were like Vaseline, and I said, no, they're not like Vaseline. They're a lot thinner than that. And if you're having trouble with dryness, be liberal with the lubricants, okay? They're going to be a really easy fix on that issue. Vibrators, okay? So a lot of times women are having a hard time being able to be stimulated. If you can kind of open your mind to trying other things in the bedroom that might be able to arouse you, then it helps a lot. And I think that they said, you know, vibrators go at like 365 beats a minute, and it just, you know, sometimes men just can't keep up with that. So vibrators can be a really good way to kind of offset some of the difficulties that women might have for orgasm. They can be purchased online or any, like, specialty store. There's a website called slumberparties.com, and it's a tasteful website. A lot of times I have clients saying, I don't want to try that because I feel like I'm going to go to a pornography website. There's a lot of tasteful places to get these kind of things. And so if you can kind of just be open to it, it's helpful. Oral and manual stimulation, sometimes if people have gotten into a pattern of how they have sex, it's kind of hard to kind of switch it up. And if maybe oral wasn't a part of your sexuality, sometimes you kind of got to think of alternative ways to help stimulate each other. Experiment with timing. So if fatigue is a big problem that you're finding with sexuality, find a different time of the day that works. If you find that you're really tired at night, then maybe an afternoon delight might be a fun way to spice things up a little bit. So it's kind of fun to kind of just experiment with timing and see what might work for you. For women, Kegels is a great way to kind of strengthen those muscle tones. And change position, mix it up. So if you have the routine, like I said, it's fun to just kind of think of different ways that might be less difficult for you to have sex if there's positionings that are not comfortable for you because of your illness. Medication, muscle relaxants and pain medications are out there. You can talk to your doctors about those. It can kind of help with the spasms and the pains that you might experience when you're having sex. Also, so I would just say if there's any medication issues, those would be something to talk to your primary care doctor about. Treatments for men. So things to try at home for men. Vibrators can be a great thing for men to try. It's if you have like impaired sensation or slow arousal, sometimes the vibrators can help men kind of get aroused easier. Oral manual stimulation, kind of an alternative to just the regular missionary style penetration sex that can kind of help. Also, rings and tubes are another way to help men, help them, like, stay hard longer, basically the kind of informal way of saying it, okay? So those things can kind of help. Medications, there's a lot more medications for men on this issue. So like Viagra, everybody's heard about that. It works about 50% of the time for men with MS. So that's always an option. in order for it to work, the man must feel aroused first, so it's going to require a little bit of creativity to kind of get that going. There's injectable medications that, again, you would talk to your doctor about this. You can put it, you insert it in the base of the penis, and it kind of helps just with the erection. There's treatments that you can do, and then there's also the same muscle relaxants and the pain medication that you would talk to your doctor about. And most MS doctors would be able to kind of help you with this. But I found most people are really shy about bringing this up, and some doctors are actually pretty shy about bringing it up too. So if it is definitely an issue in your relationship, somebody speak up, because you can get help, okay? So treatments that you can do together, okay? Rethink achieving orgasm. Rethink the way you guys have been doing sex, if you're doing sex, or if you're not partnered and you have, you know, friends that you have sex with or whatever it is, rethink how that happens for you, okay? It's a really big time that you're redefining your sexuality as things start to change, okay? Explore different things. Explore touch, body mapping, massaging, things like that. And like Allison talked about with communication, on this issue too, you have to keep talking. If you stop talking about it, it will only make the problem worse. And so be open to just being able to communicate with each other about it. The feeling and thinking sexy, that's so much in your head versus what's outside. Sexy is inside of you. If you're feeling sexy, if you're believing that you are, it can make a big difference, even though you might feel disabled or you might feel like your partner's disabled. So kind of open the way your head's thinking about what sexy means, okay? Romance is important, and that, again, goes back to a few of the things we've mentioned tonight. You got to keep up the romance. You got to keep up the time you have together. It's important to preserve that time for each other. And again, like I said before, take the caretaker hat off with the clothes, okay? If you're going to be sexy with each other, it's time that you lose that role of you're taking care of each other, but engage in relational sex with each other. It's so much more fulfilling. The last thing I have to say is that the two largest sex organs are your heart and your brain, okay? A lot of people think it's, you know, your actual sex organs, but really your heart is the investment that you're going to have with people around this issue, and your brain and feeling sexy and thinking sexy, all of those things, those are what is going to matter most in terms of your sexuality. So use them freely with each other. Keep communicating. Keep talking about the changes that are going to happen with this, because they will happen. And just keep an open heart and an open mind. And that's all I have to say about that piece. So hopefully that wasn't too painful, and there's not too many red faces out there. So I think we're kind of at the end of what, you know, Alice and I are presenting on, and so I think we just have, you know, maybe 5 minutes for questions. Any questions out there?
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, for any questions, please press the number one key on your phone. There are no questions in queue.
We must have scared them all away, Amy.
I promise it's the sex. Everyone gets so shy. I'm sorry. They made me talk about it.
Oh, we have a question coming into queue.
Okay.
Sandra, please go ahead.
Yes, this was the one who asked three times about the sex questions. The information was excellent, and I really appreciate it, and I don't have a red face. I'm really feeling that I have some tools to share with my clients.
Oh, good.
So thank you very
much. Hopefully you'll get the PowerPoint, and so there's more specifics there, and you can always feel free to email me or call me if you have more questions.
Great. Thank you so very much. It was great.
Anybody else? It doesn't have to be just regarding sexuality. If you have any final questions kind of about everything that we've covered, we're happy to answer anything.
Okay. We have a couple questions. Our first one is going to be from Mike. Please go ahead.
Yes. About the bladder issues with sex, you mentioned that there could be problems. The problem usually is that when we're ready to start, she always has to get up and leave. And she's the one with MS, and I'm not. And then by the time she gets back, since it takes so long, either I'm half asleep or I'm surely not into it anymore. Is there any tips on what to do? She gets very frustrated because she wants me to be ready, but then she gets frustrated, she has to leave, and then it's a catch-22, and we both know it, and we're able to communicate about it, so I'm just looking for a tip or two.
Yeah. And why does she have to leave during it? I didn't get...
because she has urgent things to go, even though she doesn't end up going, but she sits and tries, and then she runs out because she thinks she has to go because of the bladder issues.
Yeah. So I would just say trying to talk to each other about being comfortable about that problem, you know, and you know, if you can laugh together about it and help her feel comfortable about it, you know, that is, it makes people very uncomfortable, like if they have to go or they have to feel like they're going to go. And for women, a lot of the time, being aroused is, it definitely sometimes you get it mistaken for it feeling like you need to go to the bathroom. You know what I mean? So if you guys can, if she has any shame around it or she has any worries about it, if you guys can just keep talking about that issue, it would be good. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, it is keeping your brain engaged even when she's gone. So there's going to be times maybe when she's gone for, you know, a couple minutes, and then hopefully you can come back and still stay aroused. And so if there's something that can help you stimulate yourself while you're waiting for her, that might be a helpful way to just kind of stay in the moment, you know.
Our next question comes from Izzy. Please go ahead.
Yeah, on a regular basis, I think we've accepted my MS. It's 15 years, and the last 2 years it's gotten much, much worse, meaning like that I'm using a walker at this point, and it, you know, things are much, much more difficult. Things have really progressed. But there's that depression, though, because you think sometimes what, like, I can't even remember exactly what my question was anymore, but because I have terrible memory problems. But every once in a while, you think to yourself, I'm trying to remember what the question was exactly. Like, what do we have to look forward to, or what do we have to motivate us? Like, when, because our brains, we're smart people, but
mm-hmm.
You know, you get the gist of the question. We're smart people, but, like, then I'm, like, in this body where, like, sometimes I just can't move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to take that, Allison, or do you want me to?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that. Okay. So, you know, I think just as we have to make adaptations when we go through physical changes in our body, there have to be adaptations to our emotional state. And so I think a lot of times it's about finding purpose, you know, and finding reasons to keep going, because I think a lot of times the depression can really play with that and keep us from feeling like there are reasons to keep going. And so, you know, it's about maybe making adaptations to the reasons that you used to use to have purpose, or the reasons you used to have to keep going, and finding new reasons. So maybe it's things instead of something like, you know, again, Izzy, I don't know your situation, so I'm just going to give kind of a general example here, but, you know, and maybe instead of finding purpose through working a job or having a career, it's finding purpose through spending time with family and friends. And, you know, so it's all about changing the mindset and being flexible, like both Amy and I talked about, you know, both in your thinking and in your doing, I guess. I don't know, Amy, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would just, I mean, there's moments that it's very okay to own the fact that this is sad and it's changing things, you know? And so I can completely understand that feeling of, you know, a lack of hope, but, you know, how do you get engaged in, as Allison said, how you can remain having a purpose, and how, if you're someone that's a caregiver, how do you help each other feel like there's a purpose? And so I think, you know, if you're worried that you're feeling more depressed, then I would say that's when you would maybe want to go to a counselor or talk to your doctor about possibly, you know, where you are, where you're at the depression scale, and if you're needing some maybe medication or other alternative ways to kind of help manage that. But, it, you know, I think, you know, even for people that don't have MS, that's always a challenge, is how do you stay engaged in life? How do you keep the hope? And I think it's a daily challenge, and it's a daily decision that you're going to make to say, like, there's a lot of good things out there, and you know, some days are easier than other days, is just the reality, you know.
Please, operator, are there any other questions?
Not at this time.
Okay. Should we wrap up, Allison? Do you feel?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, unless anyone else has any last-minute questions. I mean, I'll say thank you to all of you for your participation in this teleconference. This is actually the first one that I've done. It's actually a lot of fun to be able to hear your questions, and, you know, it keeps me thinking as a counselor about what the big issues are when it comes to MS, and it will hopefully help me to help my clients better in the long run.
Yeah. Yep. And I just echo that. Thanks so much for being here, and we're rooting for you all out there, so hopefully, you know, together we can kind of make it through this illness that is MS.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. See you later. Have a great night.